When I first came up with the idea of this series, I had the themes of each sermon pretty much mapped out in my mind. Funny thing about that, though. It turns out that as much as I talk about the need for clear sight in these hard times, waiting for emergent solutions rather than laying answers on top of problems we can't really fathom the depth of, that's just what I was doing. I can define this personality with a Enneagram or astrologically or in IFS modalities or anything else, but I love to come up with answers and tell people the obvious solutions. We all do in our way. Our nervous systems need stability. So how do we walk through the charnel grounds of our culture with the equipoise of Samudra and not want to burn it down like Ashoka? Lord willing, I'm going to steer away from the one-size-fits-all answer to that question. So here's what I've been contemplating and practicing in this moment. And I'm really, really interested in hearing what's working for you. It feels like we're living in a liminal moment, a betwixt and between time. We know too much about how we are complicit in destroying our atmospheres, forests, our oceans. And we may be allowing ourselves the first glimpses of how deeply we are entangled with our unjust culture. We can't unknow this. And our efforts to change feel so small in the face of the current crisis. The image I carry in my heart for this liminal space is of a giant chrysalis. I'm thinking of, there's a TV show when someone got really upset, really stressed out, this giant chrysalis would come up. In a chrysalis, cells break down and reorganize into completely new structures. There's a complete transformation that requires time. In the chrysalis, we are neither caterpillar nor moth. We are in the goo. And in the goo is not a comfortable place to be. Others use way more elegant language. The one I like best is by a man called Dugald Hein, who calls this time the deconstructive phase of wisdom development. The deconstructive phase of wisdom development. So what do we need to deconstruct? On the outside, we can look for ways of disentangling ourselves as much as possible from the current paradigm of extraction of resources, both geologic and human. But I don't think we gain any long-term change by fighting the structure within the structure, fighting at the level of the problem. Ivy spoke of this last week when she talked about creating a global community, making decisions that work for all of us and not just satisfying our personal needs and desires. But to do this, I believe we have to take advantage of the deconstructive phase. We need to descend into the goo in order to allow both personal and cultural transformation to begin. We have to be willing to wake up to our predicament and internalize the way forward, making personal transformations first in order for external change to even become possible. So today, without any easy answers, I want to explore with you now and later, if you're wanting to come to the group afterwards, how we might envision the future we want to live in. Make conscious what is unconsciously holding us back from that vision, and seeking, yes, guidance from divine intelligence. I'm only scratching the surface on any of these. I'm sure there are books and books written about each one, and I'm hoping we can continue to play in these fields for a long time. So all three of these ideas have been part of my spiritual practice for a while now, and I thought that visualizing the world I'd want to live in would be the easiest. But for me, it's not. When I try, I get to concepts like world peace and people being kind and compassionate with each other, looking to a world that puts social care over private profit. But it turns out that conceptual isn't the same as imaginal. It's hard to really picture, really feel what this might look like. To get anywhere, we need to know where we want to go. It may not be all highway, there may be potholes, we may get lost, but we really need to see things the way we want them to be, to feel them as real now, in order to sustain ourselves on the journey. And I think this is important because seeing, visioning, imagining is not passive. It's subjective and creative. We're not only being shaped by and reacting to the world in which we live, we're constantly co-creating and shaping that world with every thought, feeling, and action. So take a moment to truly imagine the world you want to live in. You might close your eyes or not. Imagine yourself waking up, getting out of bed in a just world, sharing labor, caring for children, playing together. A world where our interconnectedness is so deeply ingrained in our nervous systems that repairing our relationship with the earth, with one another, and with ourselves becomes intuitively obvious. Where the stories we tell cultivate communities of belonging that are strong, resilient, and joyful. What does that world look like to you? How does it feel? Can you get a bodily sense of what that would be like for work, for your family dynamics, for your nervous system, to swim in the river of this new world? This is how transformation begins. The second suggestion, making conscious what is unconsciously holding us back, is really about that cellular reorganization that happens in the chrysalis, in the goo. Andrea Gibson wrote, "What part of your life's record is skipping? What wound is on repeat? Have you done everything you can to break out of that groove?" So I invite each of us to look within just for a moment and see if you can uncover one part of your life's record that is skipping. One wound on repeat. If you're in an emotionally intimate relationship, I can pretty much guarantee that your uncooked self will emerge at some point. Living in community, as I do, is another great way to discover what you think you've hidden from sight, but which actually oozes out sideways for everybody to see but ourselves. When we find something like anger or hurt or judgment, can we begin to meet them with curiosity and respect instead of avoidance and abhorrence and pushing the feelings back underground? Because once we recognize an unconscious pattern in our lives, we begin to change a long-held conditioned response. Just noticing makes the change. It's pretty remarkable. When that pattern becomes conscious, we can't help but see it ripple through every aspect of our lives in communities that integrate rather than exile their differences, in families where cast-off members are welcomed back, in movements that heal rather than perpetuate division. And on a larger scale, when we allow, welcome, and fully feel the emotions stuck in our unconscious programming, we are identifying the ways we perpetrate our dominant culture's paradigm. We see clearly our role in creating the world in which we now live. And in the light of day, these previously unconscious parts can resolve and become part of the world we want to live in. This work changes the world by creating more ease in all relationships, which is one quality of the new world of my imagining. But what makes the world we want to live in, or imagining the world we want to live in, more than a mind game? What makes uncovering unconscious patterns more than psychological homework? For me, it's the realization that I can't do it alone. Ashoka had Samudra. I need teachers. I need all of you. And I need the guidance that comes from cultivating a relationship with the divine intelligence of life itself. And I know that can be a really uncomfortable place for you, yours. I might have been lucky in not being raised Christian so that I didn't have so much of that baggage. And I'm truly not advocating for any particular way to seek guidance. For me, I need to be in personal relationship with something larger than myself. Call it divine intelligence, source, beloved God, goddess, mother, father, ancestors, protectors, guardians. I want and need mystery to be part of the conversation of this new world. What do you trust to blaze your trail into this new world? It doesn't have to look anything like anyone else's, but there's got to be some way, somehow, that you feel trust enough to lean back and seek help. Because unless I start with, I can't do this myself, it's so easy for my separate self to imagine I can do it alone. And it's the separate self that's gotten us into this mess. And it's not saying, okay, God, you take care of this, I'm off the hook. It's what the chrysalis is intended for, to stop looking for quick fixes, to allow the fear, to let go of the known, to enter the mystery. I don't think we'll be able to evolve without help, without guidance from something more than human. Desjardins wrote, "By means of all created things, the divine assails us, penetrates us, and molds us. We imagined it as distant and inaccessible, when in fact we live steeped in its burning layers. It's like a fish who can't see the water." The way forward is not a path, it's emergent. We don't know what it's going to look like yet, and that can be really scary. But the whole field creates each step of the way. It's up to us to be both receptive to the field and consciously contribute to it. So may we leave here not with answers, but with the courage to descend into the chrysalis and ask hard questions. May we meet ourselves in the gooey, unformed, sacred middle with gentleness and fierce compassion. May we trust that even in the darkest times, even at the edge of the cliff, grace is already and always reaching out to us. May it be so, and amen.